feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. There are so many wonderful passages to read in the Bible, passages that make your heart soar and bring immediate joy to your spirit. Today we begin a study in Judges chapter 19 and, well, this is not one of those passages. In fact, this chapter is more gory than glory. Sorry, but we need to be honest. This chapter and the next couple of chapters show more depravity than delight. But they are very important chapters for us. God put them in the Bible for a reason, and He wants us to learn from them. And the lessons are powerful. Let's now go ahead and join Pastor John and see what God has for us today.
Judges chapter 19, chapters 19, 20, and 21 dramatically depict the depravity and the darkness of the people of Israel at this time historically. These are grim and gruesome chapters, but they are important, for there's lessons for you and me personally, and I also believe a powerful lesson for our nation right now at this time presently. These chapters can be summed up, as really the whole book is summed up, by the last phrase, the last verse in the book. The last verse of the book of Judges sums up precisely and concisely the situation of these people in those days. Verse 25 of Judges 21 tells us, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes." We've heard that phrase before. It appears in another place. But here it appears again as a conclusion, as a summary statement of the condition of the people at this time historically. They had no king. They were not submitted to authority. And every man was doing what was right in his own sight. When I was in college, this was the prevailing philosophy that was being pumped at us at West Valley College day after day when I attended there. I took several philosophy, a psychology, and a sociology course, all in that 1 year when I was attending that state school. And I tell you, it was very evident that that was the primary philosophy of that particular college. That is existentialism. That is, hey, there are no absolutes, except that there are no absolutes. The only absolute is that there are none. In other words, you can't say what is absolutely right for another person or for a culture or civilization. Every person has to determine what's right personally, and what's right for me may not be right for you. That there are no absolutes. That is absolutely wrong. Believe me, there are absolutes. The whole universe is governed by absolute laws. You know, there was a stupid song that was popular a couple of years ago. You heard it everywhere. I can fly, just like an eagle in the sky, or whatever it said. And when I heard that, I thought, that is ludicrous. I mean, you may want to fly, you may think you can fly, but you can't fly. That is, not without some kind of external force. You know, I appreciate the message of a positive mentality, but it can also be ludicrous and ridiculous and absurd, really. I mean, a guy goes up to a 15-story building and says, I can fly, I can fly. You know, if I can see it, I can do it, the song says. If I can do it, I can think it, or however it went. And I thought, you know, jump off and see if you can fly, like a birdie in the sky, you know. And all the kids, you know, were hearing this song, and it was played at all the graduations, junior high and high school. It was a real present kind of song a few years ago. I can fly, I can fly. And it sounds nice, but it's not true. Try if you wish. You're not going to fly in your own strength or energy. You're going to crash and break your skull, break your back. You're going to get bruised and battered and bloody if you jump out of a 15-story building and flap your arms furiously. I don't care how positive you might be. You're going to crash because there's a law called gravity. People today want to say, yeah, but you just got to be positive. I was telling my daughter Mary last night. We were there talking after dinner. And, you know, Mary was expressing to Tambo and myself her frustration with math. She says, I just can't do math. I just can't do math. And I said, Mary, you have to have a positive perspective. Remember what Peter John always says. Success comes in cans, not can'ts. You know, we kind of laugh at that because Peter John used to say that and kind of as a nerdy thing to say. And, I mean, he did that with that intention. I mean, he knew. And so, you know, I said, remember what PJ says, success comes in cans, not can'ts. Don't say the word can't, Mary. She said, okay, I can not do math. And there are people, you know, that say, well, if you can just be positive, you can do whatever because you set your own agenda. You chart your own destiny. If it's to be, it's up to me. And whatever I can see, I can be, and all this kind of stuff. Well, that was their mentality back then. There are principles that are in place in the universe that are absolute, like gravity, for example. And if you seek to bend the rules and ignore those principles because you want to be free, you know, I got to be me, born free, free as the wind blows and all that kind of stuff. Here's what's going to happen ultimately. You're going to find yourself bruised and battered and bloody. And that's precisely what happens in our story. They are beat up. They are wiped out. What takes place is even tough to talk about. But it's because every man was doing what was right in his own sight. And the repercussions are brutal. And because of their carnality, the carnage that we see is awful. Well, let's take a look at our story and make some applications. Judges chapter 19. It came to pass in those days there was no king in Israel. Just like in our days, people say, I don't want any authority. I don't want to be submitted to any higher being, you see. When I was in college, you might remember, that was the issue. Question authority. Every man was doing what was right in his own sight. In those days, even as can be in ours too, really. There was no king in Israel. And there was a certain Levite. Now, a Levite, of course, was a guy that was from the tribe of Levi. And he was to be dedicated to ministry, to serving in the tabernacle, later on at the temple. Well, this certain Levite was sojourning on the side of Mount Ephraim, who took to him a concubine out of Bethlehem, Judah. Uh-oh, a Levite taking a concubine? Now, this was allowable in the Old Testament law, as we have seen previously. It wasn't ordained by God. It wasn't approved by the Lord. But the people were already taking on concubines. And so there was very real regulation in the Old Testament. But as you move through history, the redemptive history of God's people, he makes it clear that that was never to be. That was not his divine design for men and women. Jesus said it this way. Haven't you ever read what God said in the book of Genesis? Don't you know what took place? he talked about in the Garden of Eden? For this cause shall a man leave father and mother and cleave unto his wife, and the two shall be made one flesh. And what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. And Jesus used that story to say that was God's intention all along. But because of the hardness of men's hearts, Jesus said, Moses granted divorce and other regulations, including that dealing with concubines, not because that was God's heart or intent, but because that was man's propensity. So God put parameters and said, okay, in the Old Testament days, if you choose to go that way, here's the regulations. But a Levite, of all men, ought not to be involved with concubinery, or whatever the word might be. But this guy was. He took himself a concubine. And he thought that was just fine, he and his concubine. He found himself, though, experiencing the pain of going down that path, because she played the whore, verse 2, against him. She was flirtatious, obviously. She was loose sexually, and she went out, this concubine that intrigued him previously. Now he feels the repercussions. He tastes the bitter fruit of this kind of choice. She goes out and plays the whore against him and went away from him unto her father's house to Bethlehem, Judah. And she was there 4 whole months, or as your margin reads, it could be 1 year and 4 months. She runs away, being immoral and unfaithful, and she's gone for 4 months, or perhaps 1 year and 4 months. Well, verse 3 says, her husband arose and went after her. He missed her, evidently. And he went after her to speak friendly unto her and to bring her again, having his servant with him and a couple of donkeys. And she brought him into her father's house. When the father of this concubine saw him, the Levite, the guy that was living with her previously, he rejoiced to meet him, I guess so. His daughter, he knows her tendencies, that she's out playing the whore. And now she sees a Levite, a religious guy, that she was linked to before, coming back to get her. Well, he's thrilled. Any father would say, boy, if you can tame my daughter, okay. So he was delighted to see him. He rejoiced to meet him. Verse 4, and his father-in-law, that is the husband, or pardon me, the father of this concubine, retained him, and he abode with him 3 days. So stay with me, the father-in-law said, the father of this concubine. And the guy, the Levite, said, okay. And they did eat and drink and lodge there for 3 days. Verse 5, on the 4th day, when they arose early in the morning, that he rose up to depart, the damsel's father said to the Levite, oh, hey, comfort thine heart with a morsel of bread. Hey, have a bite to eat before you go, and then you can go your way. So they sat down that day and did eat and drink, both of them together. For the damsel's father had said to the man, be content, I pray thee, tarry all night, stay tonight too, and let thy heart be merry. And when the man rose up to depart, his father-in-law urged him, please stay another day. So he stayed another day, day number 4, with this man, this guy, and his concubine. Well, in the 5th day, early in the morning, verse 8 tells you and me, he once again was rising early, this Levite, to take his concubine back home again. But the dad said, hey, comfort thine heart, I pray thee. And so they stayed till afternoon, and they continued to eat. These guys enjoyed sharing meals together, obviously. For 5 days now, they've been eating and drinking and hanging out together. Well, when the man rose up to depart, verse 9, he, his concubine, and his servant, the father-in-law, the damsel's father, said unto, behold, now the day draws towards evening. Please stay all night. Behold, the day grows to an end. Lodge here that your heart may be merry. And tomorrow you can get up early on your way and go home. But, verse 10, the man would not tarry that night. He said, nope, I've been here 5 days. It's time for me to boogie. So he rose up and he departed. Now, what's going on here? I suggest to you, as we're going to see as the story unfolds, that this guy is doing what's right in his own sight. That is, the father. He says, hey, man, I want my daughter and this Levite to stay together. I'm convinced that that was his heart, his intention. And I believe that it's very possible that this guy saw himself as part of the process of reconciliation. That is, he felt as though my daughter's a little bit wild and I want this Levite to stay linked to her, so I'm going to get on his good side and be part of the equation and see if I can see this reconciliation take place. Sounds right. It sounds understandable. Any of you dads know how this feels? You want the best for your daughter. But you know what? It's not right in God's sight. God declared that when a man takes a woman and when a woman takes a man, they're to leave their parents. There's to be a severance. And yet parents so often, because we have a heart for our kids, when there's problems in the marriage of our children, we want to step in for a day or two or three or four or five or six or 10 or 30 or 80 or a year or 10 or whatever it might be. We want to say, my daughter, the marriage is in trouble. I think I can be a part of the reconciliation process. Let me share with you something. That might seem logical and it might sound good. Every man was doing what was right in his sight. But in reality, God said a man is to leave his father, mother, and cleave to his wife. The third greatest factor in divorces, the third leading cause of divorces, are in-laws. First is money, second is sex, and third is in-laws. And many times what happens is this: there's a problem in a marriage. And sweetie pie or sunny boy goes home and talks to mom or talks to dad. I can't believe how he's treating me, you know. Or I can't believe what she's doing, pops, you see. And our hearts go out to our kids and we say, well, hey, stay here, sweetie pie, with me. We can work on this, you see. Come on, watch out for that. It's a dangerous thing. After being here for 25 years almost, I can tell you the truth. It doesn't work when parents get involved in the marriage difficulties of their children. It's dangerous. Why? Because sweetie pie, you know, she'll work it out in many cases. And she goes back to her hubby. But you know, mom and dad don't forget what they heard about her hubby. See, and the kids go off and they're doing okay, but mom and dad are vulnerable to building a wall or having an axe to grind. Oh, not me, you say. I would never feel that way. Oh, yes, you would. The key is, I tell you, people never regret what they don't tell their parents or in-laws about their private lives. What you do regret, why did I trash my husband to my mom or to my dad? Why did I go there? Why did I say that? Why did I do what was right in my sight? Because now there's always that hanging in the air. That's always going to be a factor. That's always going to be part of the equation. Now, I'm not arguing for secrecy. I'm arguing for submission to what God said marriage ought to be. You leave your parents. You leave your father, your mother, you cleave to your wife. And so you that are my age and around there that have kids that are growing up and getting married, it would be good for you to consider this and say, I'm not going to go there when my son or when my daughter or if my son or if my daughter wants to trash their spouse or explain the problems of their spouse or whatever it might be. You're a wise woman. You're a wise man if you say, I'm not going to listen to that. You go home and work it out with your spouse. I'm not going to allow my well to be poisoned by listening to this. You're old enough now, honey, sonny. You're 58. Now it's time for you It's time for you to go home and do what you know to do. Don't tell me why you can't make it work. Don't tell me how bad he is. Don't tell me how terrible she treats you. Don't give me that hangdog look. You get back to your home and you love your wife. You get back to your home and you love your husband. And there's no place for you to come here to hide from him or to hide from her. I know that that isn't very popular to say today. I know what it's like to be a parent. I'm one too. But the reality is God says this is the way it's to be. We're to love our kids, obviously, and love them enough to say, I'm not going to let this happen. I'm not going to be part of the reconciliation equation. I will pray for you, and I'm going to give a good piece of advice to you. Get out of here and get home. Go back to her. Go back to him and make it work. But no buts. You just go back and do what God's word tells you to. Period. See? And why am I talking about this? Because we deal with these things here, not infrequently. And if you're younger here and you're newer in marriage, be wise. Don't go talking to your parents about your personal problems in your marriage relationship. It's not a good thing to do. As much as I want to know everything that's going on, you see, in my kids, because they're my kids. And man, I'll guarantee that my kids are right. See, every man does that which is right in his own sight. Well, that's what he was up to. I'm convinced of that. Please stay. He thought he could be part of the glue that would keep these two together. Stay here in my house. We'll work on this. We'll make it happen, you see. But finally, the guy said, no, I'm out of here. He rose up, verse 10, and departed and came over to Jebus, which is Jerusalem. Jerusalem used to be called Jebus when it was held by the Jebusites. David was the one who would later on take the city and make it his capital, and it would be called Jerusalem, the city of the king. But at that time, in these days, the days of the judges, Jerusalem at that time was called Jebus. So they came there, and there were with him two donkeys saddled. So he's got these two donkeys, his concubine also. And when they were by Jebus, the day was now far spent. They had been journeying for a long time. And the servant said to his master, come, I pray thee, and let us turn into this city of the Jebusites and stay there. But the master, the Levite, said, we will not turn aside into the city of a stranger, one that is not of the children of Israel. We will keep on going to Gibeah, about 4 miles away. Interesting. We're not going to stay here because these aren't Israelites. They're Jebusites. We'll go to Gibeah, to our people. And we're going to see that this proved to be disastrous. And I want you to take note, because sometimes people say, well, you know, I'm never going to use a non-Christian carpet cleaner or auto mechanic or dentist or whatever it might be. I'm just going to be with the Christians. I'm going to look for the fish on the business card or what have you.
This seems like a reasonable thing, but Pastor John is encouraging us to be cautious about this approach. It may not always be the best thing to do. He will share his concerns with us as we continue this teaching next time. Please join us then. This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com.
We would like to remind you that on the Searchlight website, you can find Pastor John's teachings through the entire Bible. You can listen to the audio or watch the video of any of these teachings from the website at any time for no charge. The Searchlight website address is johncorson.com.
Searchlight is a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.